Welcome everybody to today's episode of the Great Birth Rebellion podcast, where we grapple with current research and historical knowledge to help you get the best out of your pregnancy, birth, and postpartum journey. My name is Dr. Melanie Jackson at Melanie the Midwife. I'm a clinical and research midwife with my PhD, which is why I send out a weekly email which contains the resources that we use to create every single Great Birth Rebellion episode. You can join the podcast mailing list at melaniethemidwife.com. Our Great Birth Rebellion premium members also get access to podcast transcripts, additional resources, the Ask Mel a Question button, and an exclusive monthly Ask Me Anything episode where I answer listener questions. That said, let's get into it. Welcome everybody to today's episode of the Great Birth Rebellion. I'm your host, Dr. Melanie Jackson, and today we're looking at the research about what happens for you and your baby when you prioritize moving around during labor and giving birth not on your back. And I want to preface this with sharing that if you did give birth on your back, that I have absolutely no judgment towards this, and I don't intend to belittle anyone who's done this. This episode is just dedicated to what we know from the research about birth positions and explaining what happens to your body and your baby when you pursue birth positions and labor positions that are more upright and physiological. And we'll describe all of that as we go. So my interest in this topic stems right back to 2009 when I first started working as a research assistant to the now Professor Hannah Darlin at Western Sydney University. So for a whole year, I learnt from her and conducted research with her as her research assistant. And the first study we ever did together was the birth position study. And my role in this was to do the literature review, so learn what was already known about the topic, to analyse and collect data. And that involved me enrolling women into the research project who would be happy for me to come to their births. And my job was to attend the births for the women who had enrolled in the study and meticulously record all the different positions that they used and map how women behave in labor with regards to their positions. I was also a private midwife at this stage, and I knew the importance of staying out of a woman's birth space if I was not needed. So because I was a researcher, I was really aware that I could impact upon the woman's birth space. So I would do things like hide out of view from the woman under tables and behind chairs to not be in her eye line. And one day a midwife came into the room and got a shock because I was sitting inside a small cupboard with the door ajar in an attempt to not be within the woman's eye line. So I don't know if all researchers are this meticulous about their methods, but I was. I really didn't want to impact how the woman was going to behave in the space because I was supposed to be observing what her natural behavior would be. So it was a real fly on the wall experience, and I'll tell you what we discovered through this research as we go today. But that's my background in this area. It's the very, very first thing I ever researched as a researcher. And if your only experience of birth has been watching birth on TV shows or in movies, in mainstream birth reality shows, probably the most likely position that you'll have seen a woman give birth in is on their back and high enough for the comfort of the care provider. It's usually on a hospital bed with or without stirrups. So stirrups are those, they're kind of these little contraptions that pull up along the side of the bed, and they will rest your legs up on them so that you, when you're lying down, your legs can sit up and open and the care provider is in between your legs. And this is called the lithotomy position. So we're going to have a chat about the lithotomy position and what this does to a woman's body, both physically and emotionally. So we'll cover that as well as something that has cropped up over the years called the lithotomy challenge. The reality today in most Western countries is that most births are occurring in hospitals and will be occurring with the woman on her back. And I'm not saying this is best practice, I'm just saying that this is the reality. So today we're going to explore that position of being on your back and what that does to you and your baby's body during childbirth, and compare that to other position options. And we'll also have a look at why women end up on their back in the first place. So firstly, we'll look at the history of birth and what birth positions women used to use before the bed was an option. Then we'll look at what's happening now in birth and how and why the bed and reclining positions are used in modern maternity care. I'll discuss strategies that you can use to combat the expectation that you will be using the bed in labor and give you some strategies on how to avoid falling into the pit of expectations of your care provider. And then I'll explain what the research says about activity in labor and also what it says about lying down to give birth. As we go, I'll give some suggestions on how to counteract the impact of lying down positions if you need to lay down for rest or if you have an epidural. So I'll give you some practical tips on how to minimize the downsides and how to use a laying down position to your advantage in particular circumstances. They're not always bad for you. You can use them strategically for your needs in labor. As always, there will be strategies and research scattered throughout. But before I start, I want to extend my sympathies to women who felt out of control of their birth positions and trapped in their circumstances. And I hope that this episode will go some way to helping you understand and interpret your experience. And I know many of you who did give birth in your back didn't want to. And hopefully through this episode, you'll get some strategies to help you through that next time. Or if you haven't given birth yet, how you can be the recipient of care that you want so that a birth position is not imposed upon you by your care provider or the place that you're giving birth. Rightio, let's do it. Let's start with the history of birth. Seems like a strange place to start if we're talking about birth positions, but that's where we're going. Modern obstetrics is only about 200 years old, and it's with obstetricians that birthing on a bed on your back started. So we are going back to a time where obstetricians weren't involved in birth, and that was only about three or four lifetimes ago, or Joe Rogan in one of his comedy shows referred to that kind of timeline as two or three people ago. So in the not too distant past, in your not too distant lineage, there was a time where birth was in the hands of women in the community and the wise woman midwives. So traditionally, there would have been a midwife at most births. It would have been the person who went to all the births in the community, and she would have had an apprentice, and they would have had a deep understanding of birth through experience. And they all had to lean into what they knew worked for them over time and what felt right and good. So let's start with what feels right and good. Before we even start with the research, if you've given birth before, think back to the positions that you found most helpful and which you found least helpful. Which ones were less painful and which ones were more painful, which allowed you to work through the sensations and allowed others to help you work through those sensations, and which ones didn't. And if I've learned anything from giving birth myself, from witnessing women give birth at home for over 16 years, and from doing the research that I did in my early career, it's that very few women feel like they want to or try to get into a position where they are lying down on their back during labor and birth. I just don't see women doing that. And there's more recent research than just the historical understandings of what women did in birth before obstetrics. And that looked at how women who choose free birth and how they experience labor. So free birth is when you give birth at home without the input or care of a private midwife or any trained healthcare professional. So there's no influence of a medical or clinical person in the space. And we know from this that birthing positions that women reported using were really similar across the study group. So even though there was no one there at the birth telling them what to do, the women all exhibited really similar activity and position types during labor, which is exactly what we found in the birth position study as well. So of the free birth women in this particular study by Gemma McKenzie in 2021, no woman birthed on her back or her side, and left to their own devices, women rarely choose a supine position. We call it supine, but lying back position or semi-recumbent positions for births. Most adopted positions that were on all fours or kneeling on their knees. So they're kind of forward leaning and their tummy is pendulous in front of them. And no participant in this cohort gave birth standing up. And that's something I witnessed too. Women don't really choose to stand up during childbirth. Every woman in this cohort adopted a low, leaning forward position and incorporated some form of kneeling into their positioning. And this is consistent with what I observed in my work for the birth position study. As the labor progresses, women will instinctively and unconsciously move from more active and upright standing or walking positions to lower down leaning positions. At first, they'll often sway and move. And then as labor gets more, I guess as you go down the labor vortex deeper, women start leaning on things. So bench tops, couches, they sort of hold on to things, but still might adopt a standing position. And then finally, as the birth of the baby gets closer, they'll usually be closer to the floor in a forward leaning position. And they often want to anchor themselves. So a firm surface, holding onto something, holding onto a person or a support person. And this is what I observe for the women in the study and still see in my clinical work as a midwife. It's almost universal behavior for a woman to start high and more active and move lower and more fixed to the ground and needing to hold and anchor themselves. And this can be a way of tracking a woman's progress in labor. For private midwives, we don't really do a lot of vaginal examinations to understand what the woman's cervix is doing, but you can see where she is in labor by her behavior. This is one element that you can use to see how the woman is progressing through her labor. If she's still walking around swaying and moving a lot, it's possible that she's still in earlier stages. And if she's down to the ground and fixed to the ground and not able to move around as much, it's possible that she's getting closer to having her baby. So what we can conclude from this is that women don't naturally and instinctively adopt a lying on your back or supine position in labor and birth. And if women do lay down, it's usually because they're tired and not because it's more comfortable. And when they do lay down, it's usually on their side and they're piled up on some pillows or something soft. And if they don't have any pain medication, then it's usually not for a long period of time. It's usually for a short period of time. And we know this from watching women, but we also know this from historical and anthropological texts, which explain how women gave birth before there was even a bed to give birth on. And then we realize that this is a new thing that's come in with modern life and with medical input for birth. So midwives and people who prioritize physiological birth often explain and feel that when a woman is lying on her back in labor or in birth with her legs up in stirrups in a lithotomy position, this is a definite interruption in the physiological process of birth because it's not what a woman would instinctually want to do. This is something that's imposed on them by the space that they're in and by the care providers. So that's what's happening now. And I'm not saying this to frighten anyone. I'm just telling you the reality of what you are likely to be confronted with when you arrive to a hospital, when you give birth in a hospital, and perhaps this can help you be a little bit more prepared and make a plan for what you would like to accept and what you would consider as unacceptable options. So let's talk about what you can expect when you arrive to hospital at any time in your labor. And this is more about how did we get here in modern maternity? How do we get to the place where most women are giving birth on a bed on their back? Okay, when you arrive to hospital, you'll be welcomed to your room by a midwife, usually. And if you have your own midwife, this introductory process may look a little different. But for the vast majority of you listening, this will be your experience. You'll be welcomed into your room and there will be a smaller than single bed positioned in a prominent space in the room. And it will have sufficient room around it to fit a CTG machine, a drip pole, a blood pressure machine, a number of staff members. It will also be made and ready with the expectation that you will be using it. And the buzzer that notifies your midwife that you need them. So if they leave the room and you want to summon your midwife, there's a little buzzer often. That buzzer is often only accessible from the bed. Have you ever noticed that? That actually they give the women this buzzer, but it's only accessible if they are on or near the head of the bed. Some newer units will also have a call button in the bathroom. But that's the typical setup. And all the clinical lighting is directed towards the bed because there is an assumption that this is where all the action will be. All of this is not the fault of your care provider. It's actually an intentional design because the expectation is that this is where you'll be positioned. So it's embedded in the clinical design of your hospital room. And it's unlikely that other position options are going to be made actively available to you. So if you arrive to your birth room and there is a birth ball and a birth stool and a mat on the floor and a bath full of water and a sling hanging from the ceiling and a bean bag, then you are experiencing exceptional midwifery care in that setting. But it's also an anomaly in a hospital setting. Some midwifery group practice and continuity of care midwives are really excellent at facilitating this. Midwives who realize that the hospital room has an impact on the position that a woman will give birth in can use this kind of strategy to change that for a woman. So when you arrive into this space, you are subconsciously guided to the bed, and there's an unspoken rule that you'll go there. And that's because that's how the room is designed. The next thing that will happen is that you'll be invited to hop up onto the bed. The most common phrase I've heard midwives say is, "I'll get you to hop up onto the bed for me." Not all. I am really being cliche, but this is the type of language that you'll often hear. And the reason for this is that they would like to send you now through the admission process. And that's for a whole other episode. I'd love to talk to you about the admission process. But today we're just taking a snippet. The first part of this admission process starts with a vaginal examination. And we did cover vaginal examinations in episode 10 as well. So a vaginal examination and an admission CTG. So when you arrive, they want to put a CTG monitor on to check your baby and contractions and have a look at episode 12 with Dr. Kirsten Small for information on that topic. So this starts the process of tethering you to the bed. And if you're also one of the 40% of women here in Australia who are exposed to induction or augmentation of labor, then you will also start your labor process on a bed because you'll be attached to a drip and a CTG. And not every clinical unit has a CTG machine that is not tethered by cords to a big, huge unit that's next to your bed. Now, a top tip if you would like not to be influenced by this hospital room design and change how you and your care providers will use this space, there are some things that you can do, but they take conscious effort and some confidence. And like we spoke about in previous episodes, that robust friend or doula or support person who is happy to take this on as their job. And it involves using the bed as a storage space instead of a space to put your body. And so when the minute you walk into the room, you can put all of your bags onto it. And if you have the confidence and wherewithal, your support people can take the brakes off the bed. It's usually just a lever where you just kick it down with your foot and just push the bed to one side of the room or put it on a slightly weird angle that's going to throw off the energy of the space. And then you will open up the space for use of a birth ball, for a sling, a floor mat, a birth pool or a chair, or you'll have some space for walking around. And this means that you are taking back control of the birth space in this way. And this also removes the power that the bed and your care providers and the birth location will have on your labor movement. We've got to remember that the bed was there to benefit your care providers, not benefit you. So the bed allows your care provider easier access to your body without challenging their own physical well-being because they can move the bed up and down. And so the whole bed situation was not introduced to make birth easier and safer for you. It was introduced to make birth easier and safer for your care provider. So my take-home message is active and upright. So why am I saying this? Why be off the bed in labor and birth? Aside from what I talked about earlier, is that women actually usually don't find it a comfortable position that they actually choose to and want to be in. If we talk biomechanically, technical word, talking about the shape and function of your pelvis, when you're in labor, your uterus, which is muscular, pushes your baby down and through and around your pelvis, which is bony. And the bony part of your pelvis, as your baby comes down, is shaped as a curve. It isn't a tube like a PVC pipe or guttering or a toilet roll. It doesn't go straight down. it curves, and the curve end is pointing forward to your pubic bone. So it's like coming down a slippery dip. At the front, so your baby will come down and towards the front, it curves to the front there underneath your pubic bone where your pubic hair would be. So when your baby comes down out of your pelvis, it won't come out downwards, like it doesn't come down. It will curve forwards in a circular motion towards your pubic bone. So if you were to map how a baby moves down and out of your uterus into your vagina through your pelvis and out up onto your chest, we're doing immediate skin to skin in this circumstance. The trajectory and full journey would be like the shape of an oval. So the baby starts in your uterus, it gets pushed down, curves down and around through your pelvis. You would collect your baby up from towards the front of you, towards near your pubic bone and your pubic hair area, and bring your baby up to your skin. So if you were to give birth on your hands and knees, for example, the force of gravity would be pulling your baby towards the floor with force that works with the curve of your pelvis, around that curve. But if you're lying on your back, your baby has to travel uphill to exit through your vagina and pelvis. So forward leaning is downhill along the curve, and laying back is uphill, up the curve of your pelvis. And your pelvis is also mobile, and it becomes more so through pregnancy. There's hormones that mean that your pelvis actually becomes more relaxed and able to move. And so it's a less fixed bony structure. So like things like walking and swaying and dancing and squatting and marching and doing stairs can all change the space through which your baby can navigate through labor. And obviously we're not just a collection of bones. It's not just a bony structure that your baby has to navigate. There are muscles and mesh layers of fascia and ligaments and tendons and organs like your bladder and bowels and muscular structures that occupy and exist within the space that your baby is also trying to navigate and move through. And they're all responsive to the labor process, but only if physiology is allowed to flow. And we know that movement in labor is what the body and what women want to do. We also know from research that it's what the body needs to do if it's going to work properly in labor. When you inhibit movement, you create other risks in labor and birth that might not otherwise have been there. So let's talk about the impact of birth positioning real quick. What we know from research, and you can read these papers in the resource folder if you're on the mailing list, so you can get on the mailing list, show notes, have a check it out, is that your labor and birth, it will likely be quicker and require you to use less pain relief if you move freely in labor. You're also less likely to sustain a perineal tear and significantly less likely to receive an episiotomy because they can only be done if a woman is on her back. The research that talks about this actually refers to what they call sacrum flexibility. So it's the bony tailbone part of your lower back. So any position that will allow your sacrum or tailbone to move and flex out of the way. So if you consider it, it's able to kind of flip out of the way as your baby moves, your tailbone is. Not completely, but it's got enough movement to open that pelvic space as your baby moves down. And your sacrum and tailbone can move and flex if you're not sitting on it or lying on it, but it can't get out of the way if you're lying flat on your back. But this is different if you're reclining in a pool or giving birth laying back in a pool, your pelvis and sacrum still has flexibility because of the buoyancy of the water. And also if you're on your side, your sacrum still has some flexibility. So even though you're lying down or you're supine in these type positions, it's less impactful on the function of your pelvis. And so if a woman's lying back in a birth pool or lying on her side on a beanbag, or even if the structures around her are soft and will allow for some sacral flexibility, you can counteract some of the disadvantages of being supine for birth. Having said this, laying down positions can be used to an advantage. And this takes me back to a client who had a previous third degree perineal tear in her first birth. I wasn't her midwife for that one. And then when she came to me for her next birth, we checked how the healing of that third degree tear went with the use of ultrasound. and it was discovered that there was not full healing of her rectal muscles. So there was some potential for weakness that could predispose her to a repeat third degree tear. And she did decide she wanted to give birth at home. So I went a long research journey and spoke with experts to pull together a plan that will give her the best chance of not tearing again. And we used, you know, we talked about this together and decided on a strategy that she was happy with. And we decided to use a side-lying birth position to facilitate the opportunity for less tearing. So we discussed it and we put together this strategy that would involve her being unhindered during labor, so moving around, doing whatever she felt like. And then when it was time for her body to push her baby out, she would adopt a supported side-lying position on a soft surface. So her support people would help hold her leg up in a kind of simulated side squat. And during the contractions, she aimed to breathe and not push. So the idea of that was to not add any of her own strength and power behind what her body was already doing to push her baby out. And the idea was to slow down the birth. We were trying to make it a slow, controlled birth of the head. And at the same time as doing this, I would put a warm pack on her perineum, which is the PhD work of Professor Hannah Darlin. And that's proven to reduce the likelihood of third and fourth degree tears. So using the warm compress, I would also provide some counter pressure to the baby's head as it emerged in the interest of bringing the baby out slowly. And I did offer the woman an opportunity for her to do this herself, where she could put her own hand on the top of the baby's head as it emerged so that she had that feedback about how fast her baby was coming and she had control over what she could do with that. She decided not to. She asked if that would be part of my role. And so this way, the baby's head would come out slowly, millimeter by millimeter, with no sudden explosive force. We wanted to slow down the birth of the baby's head, millimeter by millimeter, working together. And it was this side-lying position that facilitated that whole process. But we aimed to keep her sacrum and tailbone free to move back and forth to allow her baby through. So we wanted to minimize the impact of that side-lying position, but also use the fact that when you're lying down, it can be harder to move your baby down and out. And so the birth is slower, but that's what we wanted. We wanted a slower progression of the birth. And this side-lying position can also be used for women who are immobilized with an epidural. And there's actually some great research. Again, it's in the resource folder coming out, and it's coming out about the use of a peanut ball, which is like an exercise ball, but it's the shape of a peanut, a big peanut. And using this peanut ball between the woman's legs and turning her from side to side every 20 to 30 minutes, which is something that's important to do with an epidural to make sure it stays effective, it can actually reduce the impact of epidural positioning on the capacity of the baby to move through the woman's pelvis. Because she's got an epidural, her muscular function is different, her pelvic floor function is different, and her pelvic shape is different. And so being in a side-lying position to just free up, at the very least, it can free up the sacrum and tailbone to be able to move and flex as the baby moves down. Now, if you're in labor and something seems to be not going right according to your care provider, they will likely escalate your care to a doctor who will arrive, and the doctor will expect that you're in a lithotomy position. Lithotomy means that you're lying on the bed. Usually the end of the bed is removed from under you and your legs will be positioned up in stirrups and often strapped there. So you're actually tethered to the bed. You would be naked and people would have access and visibility to your body. Now there's an obstetrician by the name of Florence Wilcock who has been bringing attention to the vulnerability of this position for women, especially when they're in a position that they can't get out of. So the characteristic of a lithotomy position is that the woman is required to be assisted into this position. It's awkward, uncomfortable, and even women without a baby in their uterus would find this position difficult to adopt. So it's an assisted position that women actually can't get themselves out of. So if you're a care provider and you walk into a room and witness a woman still up in the lithotomy position just because no one has thought to help her out, be the first to actually say to her, "You must feel terribly uncomfortable. Let me help you into a more comfortable position." This could be a life-changing part of this woman's journey. And so we need to consider the psychological impact of being in a lithotomy position in this time of birth where women now have met a stranger who's come in to potentially remedy a complication in their labor and birth. And Florence Wilcox, she's actually done a TEDx talk on this and it's in the resource folder. And she talks about the lithotomy challenge as a way of sensitizing care providers to understand what it feels like to be in stirrups. She does it obviously fully clothed, but she encourages care providers, doctors, midwives, anybody who would be putting a woman in this position to go and give it a try themselves. You don't have to be naked. Well, you could put a hospital gown on. And what she describes is being in a position that's difficult to get into, one that you don't have control over, one that puts you in a vulnerable position. And then when they witness how people behave around women who are in lithotomy position, the woman becomes objectified and dehumanized, and people talk around her and about her and not to her. And it's very hard to make eye contact with someone who's in the lithotomy position because their eyes are quite low and almost behind their belly or behind drapes or behind gowns. And the care provider is down low at the end of the woman where the baby's coming. And so often, the women are just hearing this voice in the distance of a complete stranger who's down around their vulva and navigating things with their baby. And so we just have to acknowledge how vulnerable this makes women, how it puts the care provider in a complete position of power over the woman, and how this can absolutely lend itself to the woman experiencing her labor and birth as traumatic. Because when you disempower somebody and dehumanize somebody, this is a recipe for birth trauma. And I'm not going to talk much more about this except to say that if you're curious about how it feels for a woman to be in lithotomy position, take up the opportunity to do the lithotomy challenge. Florence Wilcox suggests that people actually put themselves in this position for at least an hour, because in reality, this is approximately the time a woman might be in a lithotomy position. Because if she gives birth in lithotomy position, and then also what often happens after that is that the woman's perineum is checked to see if there's any tears. And if the woman agrees to be stitched, then that's performed with the woman in lithotomy position as well. So consider that the woman might be there for at least an hour. So just take yourself there as a care provider. If a woman is in lithotomy position, she's in a vulnerable situation. She's probably scared. She probably doesn't know the person who is now down touching her vulva. And you could be the person who actually provides her comfort and humanizes her. Florence talks about a doula who arrived during the time of the lithotomy challenge and who came and asked Florence, "How are you feeling? Is there any way I can make you more comfortable?" And actually started to humanize the process of being in a lithotomy position. As care providers, we are very desensitized to the process of putting a woman in a lithotomy position, but don't underestimate the power of explaining it to a woman, of checking if she's comfortable, of offering her comfort, of speaking to her at her eye level, of speaking softly and not yelling over her, and of seeking consent for everything that's going to happen to her while she is in lithotomy position. Now, finally, we also know some other things about giving birth not on your back. And that is that it can reduce your chances of needing vacuum, forceps, episiotomy birth, of your baby having a poor heart rate, and for women needing a cesarean section. What we do know is that because this makes birth a lot more efficient, sometimes it can increase your risk of having perineal damage. But again, we've got to remember that our perineum is designed to stretch, tear, and repair. And it's not always a negative thing to have perineal trauma. Obviously, we want to avoid third and fourth degree tears, but let's reduce fear around perineal trauma. The other thing that they've noticed is that, and this is not exact science, but potentially there's slightly increased blood loss for women who are in upright position. There could be lots and lots of reasons for that, including the very real possibility that it's actually easier to catch and measure blood loss when women are in upright position versus when they're lying down. And so this could contribute. It's not a significant increase, but worth mentioning because that's where the research sits. So what did we cover today? Basically, this is something that I've been passionate about since the very beginning of my career. Historically and instinctively, women do not adopt supine lying down positions to give birth. Lying down on a bed is most definitely a medically invented birth position, usually designed for the benefit of the care provider, less for the woman. It's the dominant birth position that women in the West are giving birth in, and it's considered an intervention in the physiological birth process. We learned about the shape of your pelvis and the importance of going with the curve. It's not a straight down tube. Your baby's going to have to navigate that curve, and forward-leaning birth positions, low to the ground, are typically the position that women will adopt, which also happens to match perfectly with our pelvic structure when we think about ease of birth. There are ways to counteract the downsides of lying down during labor. So if you need to lie down because you're exhausted, or you have an epidural, consider a side lying position and a peanut ball and nice soft structures and having support people around you who can help you alter your position during a contraction and rest back again in between. Today we spoke about activity and mobility in labor and birth, and that has been today's episode of the Great Birth Rebellion, and I will see you in the next episode. Thank you for being here for today's episode of the Great Birth Rebellion podcast. If you want to get access to all the resources that we use to create every single podcast episode, you can join the mailing list at melaniethemidwife.com, or better still, the Premium Members Hub. The Premium Members get access to transcripts, the Ask Mel a Question button, an exclusive Ask Me Anything episode every month. All the details are in the show notes, and I will see you in the next episode of the Great Birth Rebellion.